Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We are a couple dudes who like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Dan, is there a twist today?
There's a couple twists.
Is there a big twist?
There's a couple twists.
Is there a solid twist?
One of the twists is I know a lot about Alex Jones and his cohorts.
And all I know is what you have told me, and I've forgotten most of that shit.
Today we are drinking Arizona Prescription Energy. That is our sponsor for the day.
That's what we need.
So, hey, Jordan, today we're going to be going over the October 11th episode.
That would be great if we just did a complete pivot and we were like, fucking fooled you bitches.
I don't think we fooled anybody. We haven't said it. Oh, you guys.
I totally did.
You just put it out on Twitter.
Absolutely.
So before that, we could have plausibly denied that there was anything going on.
We absolutely could not have.
I could have been like, fuck y'all.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't give a shit. But we are going to go over the October 11th episode in some fashion or another.
Uh-huh.
But there's something special going on that you have cooked up.
Yeah, I called him earlier today and
who's him? We haven't said anything.
Oh, guys, we're going to call Larry Nichols. He has agreed to talk to us for at most an hour,
yeah.
Which I don't know if we'll be able to keep from screaming at his face. That long
over the phone, yeah, but yes.
But yeah, so I talked to him earlier today. We had a very congenial conversation wherein he tried to explain to me how the impeachment process works as though I was fucking 12 and in a civics class. It's not.
All right.
The House votes, and then if they are like, yeah, let's do that, the Senate votes. It's very simple.
Right, but it's complicated.
It's not even really going to be a trial if it does happen. They're going to be like, hey, you saw him be president.
Yeah.
He's not going to be president.
No, no, no.
And it won't happen because the Republicans are fucking cowards. Which
yeah.
Even he fucking knows because his
sure.
threats are so goddamn empty and full of bullshit.
Well, we go back to the Saul Alinsky tactics that we talked about yesterday.
Right.
One of them, the threat is we're always worse than the actual follow through.
Absolutely.
He knows that because he's a Salinskyite, as we've...
damn you, Dan!
So, Larry Nichols, like you said, he agreed to talk to us for an hour. There's no way it's going to go that long.
No.
He also said, I think your offer was half an hour.
Yeah.
I also predict he's going to hang up on us pretty quick.
My prediction is he is going to try and worm his way out of literally everything.
Well,
like he will fight with us for an hour just to avoid admitting a goddamn thing. And here is Larry Nichols right now, guys.
And then we will get to the episode proper.
Absolutely.
Let's do this.
Larry, how are you today?
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing just great. Just to let you know, we are live on the air right now. We are recording this.
No, am I early? I'm sorry. I didn't know whether you were going to call me or I was to call you.
You are right on time, my friend. So, real quick, before we even get into this, there's one thing that I do want to kind of get up front. Which is that we're going to be asking you a bunch of questions about your past with the Clintons and a lot of the claims that you've made. And you've said a lot of things that are untrue. So what we'd like to do is, you know, just have a conversation where you feel comfortable telling us what really happened in all of those things. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Excellent. Alrighty, real quick then, let's start at the beginning. What work did you do for Bill Clinton?
I started out working for Jack and Whit Stevens. And they were, Jordan, in that day in Arkansas, they were the kingmakers. They were ultra, ultra rich, owned Arkansas, Louisiana Gas. They had the largest brokerage firm outside of Wall Street, anywhere in the world, right in Little Rock. And if you were going to do anything in politics, you had to go through them from dog catcher to governor.
Gotcha.
And they hired me to meet this young guy that they wanted to make the youngest governor in the history of the country, and that was, of course, Bill Clinton.
I was thinking Doogie Howser, but that's fine.
Just about, but not quite.
Yeah, so you started working for Bill, what year was that?
Oh, wow, that would have been 76, maybe.
76.
Don't That's about as close. It was his first run for governor.
Okay.
Hey, Larry, I understand that before that, I'm Dan. I'm the co-host of the show.
Hey, Dan. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Thanks for joining us. I understand that before that, you were in marketing. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I had a commercial production company, mm-hmm. which was called On Air Productions. And we did jingles for companies all over the country.
Okay, and then how did that turn into your job for Bill?
With the Kingmaker.
Well, it's kind of, you're just a world of weird. Because I developed a name for being able to do jingles and come up with ideas for customers and such, and I did a lot of work for the Stevens Company. They owned several banks. In that time, the laws in Arkansas were you could, there couldn't be branch banks in other cities. So every town had their own bank. And, of course, the Stevens brothers just about owned a bank in every town. So I would come in and take over little banks and handle their advertising, set them up, do all of that. And that got me involved in more than just radio, but I had to do newspaper. And then ended up having to get into TV in the major market, Little Rock. And so, because of all of that, I ended up doing work for Parks and Tourism, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, and the Stevens had a lot of confidence in me. And so when they said, we got somebody for you to meet, they paid me $5,000 to meet Bill Clinton. I met him at a restaurant called John Barleycorn's in Little Rock.
So, sorry, real quick. So they paid you $5,000 just to meet him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, to meet him and give them my assessment of what he was like, what I thought he'd be as a candidate.
And what was that?
Well, it was kind of tough to meet him. I met him there. And I'm going to report to you what I reported back to the Stevens. It's kind of hard to talk to the guy because every time I turned around, he was pinching a waitress in the butt. he never really talked about anything. He was chasing women all over the place. And
it was the 70s. It was the 70s.
It was the 70s, and buddy, he was running hot. And he told me in that first meeting that, he kind of liked to get out and get around. And he really, liked the perks of being governor when he got to be governor. He liked the perks. And
so in the very first meeting you had with Bill Clinton, Bill told you that he liked to screw around, basically.
He said he liked the perks and he'd pinch the waitresses on the butt. They'd get mad and run off. And then he'd get up, and I'd turn around and couldn't find him. And then he'd be hugging and grabbing some waitress by the boobs. I mean, it was just it was a nightmare.
So why did you start working for him then, if that was that?
Well, money.
Money?
Yeah. I went to the Stevens, and they said, what do you think? I said, well, I got a little check-in. I met him. And I got to be honest with you guys, this guy is a pathological liar. I said, in the hour or so that we met, I don't think he told me the truth about a damn thing. He's a hopeless womanizer. I mean, this guy is obsessed. And in case y'all don't know, which I was telling them, in case y'all don't know, this guy is into marijuana and probably cocaine.
I've spent some of my life doing marijuana. And
yeah, so are we. We're cool with that.
Hey, back then you couldn't be, not in the Deep South.
So, Larry.
Not in the mid-70s in the Deep South. That was not cool.
I can see how that would be a problem with, like, the political world and stuff. But, Larry,
so
this was during the...
Me,
sorry.
So, you think you can't handle a case or something like that? And I said, I did not say I couldn't get him elected. I just told you what he was.
So did you function as his campaign manager then?
We called it handler.
And this was during the first time he was governor of Arkansas.
First time, yes, sir.
So then he did not become governor contiguously. He lost the second time and then became governor again in 83.
Well, what he actually did, we got him elected, and then Bill got too big for his britches.
In 81?
And, yes, or whatever year that was, his first term. And then here come, during his first term, he just went wild. He went crazy, and then he made the ultimate mistake dealing with the boat people from Vietnam. And he went against the Stevenses. And when he did, Mr. Jack, Mr. Twitt called me in, and they said, you know, excuse my language, they said, the son of a bitch don't listen, so we're going to stump break him, and we're going to run somebody against him. And I said, well, who's that? And they said, Frank White. Now, Frank White was a Republican, mm-hmm. and in that day in Arkansas, he was the whole Republican Party. There were no Republicans in Arkansas, and he was a buffoon. Okay. A complete blithering idiot.
Who are the boat people from Vietnam?
That was when there were all these Vietnamese that had escaped Vietnam when we pulled out, and they were trying to find places for them. We had a place called Fort Cathy in Fort Smith, Arkansas, which was an old World War II base or army post. And so Bill had the brilliant idea that he could put them there. And Mr. Stevens and Jack and Whit, they didn't want them in this state by any means. And Bill said, to hell with it. And he put them in. And so I went to work for Frank White. And we beat Bill.
Okay, so you went to work for Bill. Then you went to work for Frank White. And then you went back to work for Bill?
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Well, remember, you say I worked for Bill. Actually, I worked for the Stevens brothers.
Okay. Right.
Stevens brothers told me who and what to do. So they said, beat him. Here's our candidate. So we ran in, beat Bill. During that 2 years, Bill made up. And that's when Bill changed. Jordan Dan, that's when Bill Clinton changed. And it was during that period of time. Remember, well, let me say this. When we first took him on, his whole first term, Hillary would not take his name. They were married. But she would not let anybody call her Hillary Clinton. She was
Rodham. Rodham.
She would not take his name. That was a problem back then. So when he came back to the Stevens, got on his hands and knees, apologized. They took him back. Everything changed. He became a company man then. Then he sort of straightened up and flew right.
So Bill sold out.
Clinton, although she hated it. And we got him elected again.
So Bill sold out basically in 82.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, so then you stopped working for Bill in 1988. Why did that happen?
When you were working in the marketing department of the Arkansas Finance Development Authority.
Right. Well, how I got there, I got involved with the Nicaraguan resistance, the Contras.
Uh-huh.
And I was running around down there doing stupid stuff, and finally, it got so bad down there that I was getting old, couldn't, you know, run, jump, leap tall buildings in a single bound. So when I got back from one of the adventures, my family instructed me, I was getting too old for that racket and I needed to get a straight job. So.
What racket?
Working with the Contras and kind of in the jungle and doing crazy stuff.
So did you actually go to Vietnam doing crazy stuff in the jungle?
Not Vietnam. This
Nicaragua. Sorry.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Sure did.
Could you tell us a little bit of that crazy stuff?
Well, basically, from getting there until you leave is crazy. Sure. I would get on a plane in either New Orleans, usually New Orleans or Florida, Miami, And in Miami, I'd be with a group called Southern Air. They would take me in, and I would jump out of a plane. And then if you went out in New Orleans, you went out with the Flying Tigers. And we would go in, and we would deliver hard and soft rice. Now, those are the code words for hard rice was weapons, ammunition, etc. Soft rice was humanitarian. And how I got involved, if you remember, I ran Contra. When Oliver North and Poindexter got KO'd in the Iran Contra hearings, then Reagan put me on the ground in Nicaragua, replacing North, and he put General Jack Sinhop, replacing Poindexter, going around the country raising independent private monies.
So how did Reagan put you down in Nicaragua? You didn't stop working for Bill until 1988.
No, I was still with Bill.
Right.
TDYs, what are called TDYs. And part of what I did with my jingle company, you had to have a business where you could be gone for a few weeks if necessary at a time and nobody knew any wiser. So my jingle business was perfect. You know, I'd claim I was going to Dallas or New York or whatever. And in fact, I would buzz down to Nicaragua and help Enrique and the boys figure out what to do. And then I would make sure that the hard rice or soft rice went to where it was supposed to go.
Okay, so if I understand this correctly, you had a jingle business, and then directly from there you were recruited into extrajudicial Nicaraguan operations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
That's wild.
How in God's name did that happen? Did the Stevens brothers have something to do with that?
Very much. Stevens brothers, they had oil and gas properties in Nicaragua. They were very heavily invested in Nicaragua, and they needed one of their guys to take care and make sure of their investments and properties. And of course, you got to understand, Mr. Whit Stevens was a big to-do top of the group with the Democratic National Party and committee. Jack Stevens was the big guy with the top of the people in the Republican National Committee.
Okay, so here's the problem I have with that. Is that
their interests make sense or whatever. That's fine. But the idea that, like, they would have you taking care of all of their interests based on a slight bit of advertising work seems very strange.
Yeah, that's like if Obama had the guys from the Sonic commercials go run Iran for a while.
Right.
So
it just seems very wild.
Yeah, you'd have to been there. Actually, it was awfully wild.
It was just a job. It was just a job. All right.
Working as a handler for Bill, you know, I didn't stay with him 24/7. Once he got elected, I would be called in. You know, they needed a decision made, and they wanted me to go and get him convinced to do this, that, or the other, or to stop him from doing this, that, or the other. That's the way it started. The way it ended up was I ended up fixing it up with women and covering up for the women he was with and trying to keep his running around and cocaine and everything else, make sure that didn't hit the press.
All right, that sounds a little bit far-fetched.
Man, I don't know why.
That's bananas. If true, that is one of the most implausible realities I think I can imagine.
Damn, I hate that you got a limited imagination.
Fair enough.
So the public, version and all the information that sort of is, verifiable through, sourced reports, were that you worked there at the Arkansas Financial Development Authority, and that you made a bunch of long-distance calls to Nicaragua, and that's why Bill asked you to resign. So that part is that's true.
That's sort of what was said publicly. That was not the truth at all, but that's the way it came out.
How is it that all of this reporting corroborates one side of the story and only you is supporting your side?
You know, if you look at the media today, do you see the bias, say, for Fox News? Fox News, there is nothing good the Democrats do. Nothing. But now if you watch ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, there's nothing good the Republicans do.
Right.
They're totally biased.
You got to take everything. Yeah, of course. We're all adults. You got to take everything with a grain of salt, certainly. But look for...
In Arkansas, remember, that's the only world I had to deal with, Arkansas.
And Nicaragua.
Well, yeah, but the Stevens, I'm talking about as far as Bill was concerned, the Stevens brothers controlled everything in Arkansas. So if the Arkansas Democrat were about to break a story where they caught Bill Clinton screwing the farmer's daughter, the Stevenses would send me in, and I would say to the Democrat, I don't think you ought to do that, because if you do, we're going to pull 5 car dealers and 6 banks advertising, and you're going to be in trouble. And so the owners of the paper, even though the journalists might get upset, the owners could quash just about anything. And that's what we did for years. They just controlled the media. What you see today in Washington was in a smaller way Arkansas. Arkansas was its own little third-rate country back then.
Okay, so then let me ask you this question. In 2013, you went on a radio show and claimed you killed people for the Clintons.
Yeah, I was drugged up.
You were drugged up. So,
yeah, I had gone. Now, hear me on this, because I've tried to straighten this out a minute, million times. I had gone and had eye surgery. I had just come in. They had used a drug on me called Versed. When I got home, the phone rang. My wife left. She went back to work. I sat down. The phone rang. A lady came on, and what was his name? Pete Santilli. I had done his show a couple of times. She said, Pete wants you on the air, and I said, I don't think I should, and I told her I had just had surgery and pretty drugged up. Next thing I know, here's Pete. We're talking. I think we're off the air. He didn't do what you did. Say, you know, you're alive. But it wouldn't have mattered. What I was trying to explain to Pete was, we had a program called Kill 'Em When They're Young. Mm-hmm. Kill 'Em When They're Young. That was a play we used, which meant if somebody, for example, if Bill screwed the farmer's daughter, and the farmer was fixing to start blabbing, we would go in, I would go in, or Morris, or Begala, somebody would go in, and we'd explain to the guy, and if he looked like he was really fixing to talk, we would destroy him. You know, we'd find out about him, who he was screwing.
Okay.
So the killing was metaphorical.
His farm payments, whatever we could find out. And if we didn't find anything, we made it up.
Interesting.
Okay,
interesting.
So if you're admitting to saying that you made stuff up then, I mean, that kind of makes it hard to believe what you're saying now, right? Do you see the
Jordan, let me tell you something, you and Dan, this is what's going to kill you. I really don't care what you believe.
That's fair.
I truly believe that, yes.
I barely care what I believe.
Clear the air here. I don't come on this program claiming to be anything other than the sorriest scum of the earth you have ever known.
That's fair.
Hey, Larry, nothing I hadn't done.
Larry, we're not trying to come down on you. We're not.
Well, that's all right. Listen, hear me out. I did. I have. So, there's nothing, you know, that's one of the things that the national media had trouble with when I was fighting Bill. When he was president, they'd come in and they'd heard something, and I'd say to the media, hell, you think that's bad? You should have come to me. I'll tell you stuff I've done that's a lot worse.
Okay, well, then, in that case, so if you admit to having made up stuff whenever there wasn't any information, would you say that when you said that Barack Obama is a secret Muslim, you made that up to smear his name?
No. I said that's what I did. That's what I did, guys.
Okay, so when did you stop doing that?
January the 16th, 1989.
When your family told you that you were getting too old?
No, this is after I had... You didn't ask me the trick question. What happened between Bill Clinton and I? When I was in Nicaragua,
I'm not really
Adolfo Calero, who was the head of the directorate, you can check it out, he kept hearing this drugs for guns. They didn't have drugs for guns. If we'd have had drugs, cocaine, we would have given it to the war wounded. We had nothing.
Right.
He asked me if I could come back to the States and find out what on earth, where was this coming from. I came back. I was working at the Arkansas Development Finance Authority. I was marketing director. Being the tight man I was with Bill, they had two sets of books, which was not uncommon. It was,
sure.
APA was a quasi-state agency.
Sure, sure.
When it needed the cover and protection of being a state agency, it was a state agency. When it came time to shield money and hide money and give Bill's buddies loans, it was a private corporation.
Right.
When I was going through the books, I kept noticing Dan Lashner, Bill Clinton's best friend, the guy that every day about 1 or 2 o'clock he would go over to his office, and Lashner had a huge candy dish full of this white powder, and it was cocaine. Had it on his desk for everybody to see.
That sounds crazy.
Well, it's also, I mean, Larry, all this stuff is great, and I don't doubt, I mean, I might,
well,
but look, the thing is.
What I'm trying to tell you is, when I started looking in, what I found was that there was this damn airstrip in Mena, Arkansas, and it was bringing in $100 million a month of cocaine.
From where I'm sitting, Larry, it just seems very convenient that you're bringing that into all this when you admit that you were involved in Nicaragua. You know, it seems like you're maybe.
Yeah, once again, bud, I can't help you. I'll just tell you what I tell. And you believe it or don't. Hey, well, no skin on my back either way.
That's fair.
I'll tell you this. I did find it. It was in the books. At the agency I worked, Dan Lassiter was hiding and laundering the money through straw sales through his bonding agency, getting bonds from ADVA, and that was how they were running the money.
Right. Now here's my question to you real quick before you keep going any further. Now, when you are describing this story, this is happening at the same time that you are convicted of fraud and you had to declare bankruptcy.
Where did you get fraud out of that?
It was theft by deception. They were facing charges all around Arkansas, and
was when I came out against Bill.
That was
before, they started doing the Clinton roast to me.
That was before that. This was in the lead up to when you were
fired. You're talking about another Larry Nichols. That was not me.
Right.
Oh, we're talking about you, buddy.
Then it was a case I didn't know nothing about, which is not uncommon. See, when I was with Bill, it wouldn't matter what we did. You couldn't do anything to me.
So now you're
describing Bill Clinton as some sort of all-knowing power that can just black people at will. Don't you see how this kind of massive conspiracy just doesn't hold up?
Well, especially because you're also saying that it's these banking brothers.
You because you don't understand the world we lived in then. Jordan, man. You don't have to believe any of this. That's fine with me. That's fine. I lived it.
Okay.
About the stuff I lived, hot nuts.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's switch gears then. So just recently in 2015, you told Alex Jones that Obama wanted to be the last president because if you're the last president, you become king.
That's right. Under the theme of provisional government system, yes.
Why do you think that's true?
Because I spent 2 years working with General Tommy Franks. We worked on the FEMA Provisional Committee. And the FEMA Provisional Government is what everybody in Washington, I don't know who you know with anybody, but anybody that's been around Washington for the past 25, 30 years knows that for years and years and years, the whole thing comes down to if this country goes into a state of disarray, then all of a sudden there are two things that can happen that trigger with the president only for putting us into FEMA provisional government. One, of course, is some kind of attack or national disaster. The other is if five major cities have five major riots at one time, the president can push a button and declare FEMA provisional government.
That's demonstrably untrue.
It sounds.
See here again, Jordan. Oh, I just killed him. Where do you live?
I don't know. I don't know who's
Chicago?
Watching. Yeah,
Chicago,
I live in Chicago.
Right. How many years you spent in Washington?
I have spent no years in Washington.
Oh, wait a minute. Then how many years have you spent with governors, United States congressmen? How many years have you done that?
I have done none of that either.
I've read a lot of these FEMA camp and FEMA documents. I've read a lot of those.
All of those FEMA documents, though, are public information. So you're saying that there's a secret set of FEMA documents that we don't know about.
I'm saying that the FEMA provisional government triggering plan is as real as the chair you're sitting in. Just that real, bud. Now, there's a lot of things. This just kills me. This one kills me, Jordan Mann. And I love you guys. Hell, this is fun. You know what gets me? What gets me is there are people that run around and they say they know this, that, and the other. Washington is a city full of secrets. Our government is a government full of secrets. And if you, sitting in Chicago, can go on the internet or wherever it is you go, and you can just trip through and find out all of the secrets.
I mean,
then it really wouldn't be a secret, would it,
Larry?
Does that make sense to you?
I think we're just basing this on things we've read, things that we understand, and the idea that the president becomes king and all the Congress people become dukes. It's just very fanciful. That's not how the world works.
Let me ask you this. Why would somebody, how much does a congressman now make a year?
Roughly
$250,000. $250,000. Does it make sense to you that somebody would spend $20-30 million to get that job?
Well, yeah, all they want is tax cuts for the rich.
Well,
and
they want the power, is what you're saying.
Well, and sneaky,
you know,
money that's not in their salary.
Good stuff for them.
Yeah,
and then you consider all of the parachutes that they're taking on consulting and lobbying jobs later on.
It's not becoming a duke.
Right.
Yeah, it's not some sort of feudal society that they're trying to build.
But you see, all of that is muddied up into a whole world that I'm trying to tell people about. And I know, Justin, Dan, I'm nobody. When you stand flat-footed, you look at another normal human being and you tell them about the FEMA provisional government system and plan. You don't think I haven't seen eyes roll back in the back of the head.
I bet.
You don't think, I don't think they know I'm a nut.
That's a good point. I think everybody's pretty aware.
Yeah.
So
it's not easy, guys. It's not easy telling what has to be told. that I think has to be told. Now, I could be wrong, and I'll tell you this. It cost me and my family everything to do this. You know, when I was with Bill and the Stevens brothers, hey, buddy, it was Fat City. Fat City.
Well, but then if we're going to talk about the cost of things, would you say that right now part of your income, if not a lot of it, comes down to, you know, people believing what you're saying?
It comes down to me telling people what I believe, what I know. That's it, man.
Oh, okay. Also,
what do you got? You got people that buy ads for your program, or you've got people that contribute to your program?
No, we have jobs.
Or whatever. They believe you, right?
We have 9-to-5 jobs and a couple of jack-offs who think we're funny. That's that's what we got, Larry.
That's all right.
So
there are people. What I'm saying is there are people that listen to you. The people that listen to you, and you may be right. You may not be, but they believe in you.
Well, see, that's
guys. I
think
I can do, Jordan, is tell what I know, and when I tell it, you know what? I'm clean.
Right.
I'm
clean. Well, then here's
you believe it or you don't.
Well, then here's my question. Okay, if you were afraid of Obama trying to become the last president and then becoming king, essentially, are you not worried about Trump doing that?
I'm worried about anybody doing that. You bet your butt.
Okay. So would you say that Trump is, if Trump, so here's the thing I want to know. Knowing what we know about Trump and his actions currently, it seems far more likely that Trump is going to try and pull that off. It is, if it is real, than Obama ever would.
Right. Because he's not a secret Muslim.
It is within his power to do it. Yes.
And, oh, hey, this is fun.
It's within his power. But then again, it's within his power as it was Obama, as it would have been Hillary's, you know.
If
he can push the button for a nuke, it's within his power.
If
I want him to, no.
If becoming king is part of the FEMA provisional powers, it stands to reason that FEMA, as it is right now after these hurricanes, we've seen that they don't do the best job necessarily. They are not necessarily the most effective organization that we have within our government. It seems like them installing a kingship might be difficult when they can't get supplies where they need to be.
And then you'd need the support of the military.
True. They would have to turn against the entire concept of democracy.
Guys, there is a plan. It's called the FEMA Provisional Government Plan. It's as real as when I told people that states have rainy day funds. So they tell you they're broke, right? States tell you they've got nothing.
Wow.
But there is a hidden account called a rainy day account, and every state has them. I don't know about Illinois, thanks to Chicago.
Look, we don't know too much about Washington, but we live in Chicago, so we know when people don't have any goddamn money. So, so believe me when I say, if there really were a rainy day fund, we would have gone past that.
When Mike Huckabee was governor, you know, the preacher Mike Huckabee, he went all over the state. When I was telling people, guys, we're not broke. There's a rainy day fund that had like $11 million in it, which is not big, but you're not broke. I don't remember what it was. Something had to be done. He would literally tell the people of Arkansas that there was no such account.
Huckabee!
As it turned out, 4 years later, after he was gone, it did come out that we do have a rainy day fund.
But a rainy day fund is a long way away from having a FEMA provisional government.
That's very, very different.
Not really.
Okay.
No, what?
Not really. I mean, being governor's a long distance from being president.
Well, so.
Apparently, it's very close to being a duke.
I'm telling you, you know, Washington has secrets that the two of you, 99.9% of the people in this country do not know.
I'm sure of that. I believe that 100%.
Now, whether you believe me on the FEMA provisional government plan that it does exist, to be quite honest, Jordan and Dan, I don't mean this ugly towards you, but I don't give two hoots and a tinkers whether you believe it.
That's
oh
fair.
Yeah, no. You can curse if you'd like to. We say fuck all the time.
Well, I'm just telling you, look.
All right.
You think I give a shit about you?
Hey.
There we go. Now we're on board. So here's another question for you. All right.
Mm-hmm.
When you go on Alex's show, you willingly go along with the whole globalist idea. How much of that do you actually believe?
When I go on with Alex, and Alex Jones has been very good to me over the years, when I go on Alex Jones, I talk specifically about the issue that I bring forward. I do not go on Alex, if you watch and notice.
Oh, you do.
What is it? I don't go on Alex and talk about general subjects. For example, when he got involved with the story about Pizzagate, you didn't see me talking about it. I don't know about it.
That's good. You lucked out on that one.
I don't go on. Doesn't mean it's not true. Doesn't mean it is true. Right. I don't talk about it.
Well, what you did talk about one time was that you believed Hillary Clinton practiced black magic.
No. See, that's where you guys just get a little bit close, but you still miss the cookie. What I said was that I made the arrangements out of the state budget, which later, by the way, was backed up publicly by Larry Patterson and Roger Perry, two of the state troopers on his security when he was governor.
Is this that trooper gate stuff?
For Hillary to go to L.A. once every month, 6 weeks, whatever. I had to raise the funds for her to go meet with Linda Bloodworth Thomason, Harry Bloodworth Thomason.
From Designing Women.
You know, Designing Women.
Love it.
And,
it's a great show.
Would go, as we were told, Hillary would go to a witch's church.
Larry, quick follow-up.
If you listen to Alex Jones's program closely, you will hear me say, I don't know what they do in a witch's church.
Quick follow-up. Well, Linda Bloodworth Thomas from Designing Women was there. Did Delta Burke ever go, or Meshach Taylor?
Now, Dan.
I'm curious. I liked that show when I was a kid.
Hello?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just asking if Meshach Taylor ever went to the witch church with Hillary.
You there?
You
still there?
What you said, Jordan.
I'm sorry about that. We're having a little bit of issue. It's just on my phone. So really, really quick. I mean, here's my last question to you.
Wait a minute. Let me answer one thing, Jordan, before you do that.
Sure.
Dan, Jordan, did you hear me mention Linda Bloodworth Thomason's name and say she and Hillary went to a witch's church?
Yes.
All right. Do you not think if I were Linda Bloodworth Thomason and some idiot named Larry Nichols was making such a direct statement about me, don't you think they might want to sue me to get me to stop defaming them?
No, because that would just cause more attention to come your way. That's not a good argument.
Okay.
I think that's probably, they might have better uses of their time. In the same way, Larry, like, you did threaten to blackmail Congress recently, and no one's going to sue you for that. So Congress people have much better uses of their time than hunting down these sort of lawsuits that probably could be won based on it being very...
Can I give you a better reason why they won't sue me?
Sure.
Because you're going to blackmail them?
No, because of discovery.
Oh. Right. That would...
Do you mean the information that you would otherwise use to blackmail them would then become public?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
Larry, if that argument worked, no one would ever get charged with blackmail.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Daniel, you and Jordan.
Yep.
Here's something you can do, and I'll make a commitment right now.
Okay.
When we get close, and when we come to the time that the Robert Mueller gets his grand jury to go to the House of Representatives.
You did also threaten to blackmail him.
And ask for an impeachment when they try that. If I don't bring out stuff on a couple of Republican House members.
Like they're witches?
Well, like maybe whatever I want, you know, whatever's on their file. Whatever I've got them.
All right.
And I don't destroy them. I mean, destroy them bad, buddy. Bad. Then I will come on this program, and y'all can have the time of your life, just, you know, laughing at me.
I think we have a misunderstanding of what our goals are, and I think, but be that as it may, Larry, thank you for talking to us. I think we got to get a move on with stuff, but we really appreciate your time. It does mean a lot.
Well, thank you guys, and I'm sorry I don't sound all that great, but anytime.
You're just fine. All righty, you have a good night.
You too, boy.
All right. So guys, we are now, post call. Look.
Fucking fuck that dude.
Well, here's.
He really believes all of that bullshit.
Yeah. And the issue.
Fuck me.
And the issue becomes too, like, so much stuff is completely undisprovable. And that whole idea of you had to be there in the wild 70s in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you don't know what it was like. In the 70s, people were blackmailing people all over the fucking place.
And you couldn't do cocaine in the South. Look, there's all that sort of stuff. And it's like, all right, fine. That's the narrative that you want to tell. I obviously wasn't in the 70s in Arkansas.
Right.
But it's very difficult to get around the idea that, like, you were a functionary low-level ad man, and then you got put in charge of drug running and gun running operations in Nicaragua and the youngest president ever's handler. Like, it's just all, like, and his rebuttal to that is just, well.
Okay. So do you know what's crazy?
It's like
the guy who wrote Bada Bop Bop Ba.
I'm loving it.
He is in charge of North Korean spy operations right now.
He's deep cover.
Fucking.
Well, but here's the thing. I think, and I want to say this to the chat room. Please don't ever ask us to call him again.
That was fucking bullshit. I'm pissed off.
It's really difficult for me to handle, too, because the way our phone and mic system is working, that, you know, it's just, it's difficult for me to get involved, and Larry just loves to fucking talk.
Yeah, I know.
That I couldn't really get anything in, and there's like follow-ups and rebuttals I would have liked to make, and it's just, it's incredibly difficult. There's no way his timeline works out in terms of...
Not at all.
In terms of stuff that I know he was doing after he got fired from the Clinton's campaign, there's literally no way any of that stuff matches up. He started working with a guy named Larry Case and trying to sell stories about these women to tabloid papers.
Right.
Larry Case recorded all of his conversations and gave them to the press after he and Larry Nichols had a huge falling out. I will put a link up later to a Salon article about this, and it's fascinating. Like, it, you're never going to get what you want out of a phone call
like
that.
Well, and not least of which, my biggest issue there is...
Well, I mean, we just let him ramble, and that might not be the best thing ever, but I got a little bit of a cold.
I was really hoping that if we, like... I was hoping that sooner or later he would drop the facade. Because
why?
Because he can't fucking keep doing that. Mm. We know it's not true. He genuinely believes that, though. So I guess of course there's no point in doing that shit.
Well, if you have...
He's a slimy piece of shit who clearly killed people in Nicaragua or whatever the fuck he wants to believe.
Well, but also if you have like 30 years of follow-up or 30 years of building in... you know, this narrative, then it's going to be very difficult for you to give it up at any point. I think that, you just live inside that now. And I don't want to say, I mean, I don't want to say that he, you know, he's crazy or anything like that. That's not my interest. But just, I do.
He's crazy.
All right. I obviously don't believe, most of that. And now your name is Justin, apparently, in the chat room.
Fair enough.
So now, after that's out of the way.
All right, listen, Justin.
Yeah. So, now that's out of the way, let's get to the episode.
Now that we have a thoroughly unsatisfying interview with that piece of shit.
Yeah, it's a little blue ballsy, but I'm glad we did it. I wish we would have pushed a little bit harder, but, be that, you know, it is what it is.
That's why I told you you should have.
It's always going to be different or difficult when you're, you know, having a conversation with someone who is, you know, pretty well versed in marketing and propaganda.
Absolutely.
Has a lot of experience in it. And, you know,
did you see the way he kept trying to butter us up the same way that he fucking always?
Sure.
Listen, I love you guys and you can believe what you want
to
believe.
And the appeal to ignorance is always not very like it's a roadblock. It's like, how long have you been in Washington? Like,
yeah.
I don't believe you've been there much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it is what it is.
The idea that you go from a fucking jingle business to a huge player in Nicaragua is fucking bananas.
Yeah, the only way I buy that is with quite a bit more detail that's been left out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Which I don't...
We delivered hard rice and soft rice, which is, like, my guess is that is something that he heard or read one time in a mystery novel. And he was like, no, it's in my narrative.
Hanging out with a VFW hall.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So here's the first clip from today's show. We don't have a whole lot. We're not going too deep into the episode, but I just pulled some stuff. It was a boring show. Alex is just on a whole big, hey, I've been totally right about Las
everything.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Everything. He's just claiming responsibility for being right about everything. Cause it turns out that, the Mandalay Bay, the hotel, they are saying that the timeline that the police are suggesting now is not maybe accurate.
Uh-huh.
So Mandalay Bay is spokespeople come out and they say, this timeline that says that the guy shot a security guard at the hotel 6 minutes before he opened fire might not be accurate.
Right.
And the reason that they might be saying that is because since the shooting, they've lost billions in stock.
Right.
Their company is really imploding. And one of the reasons is because seems unsafe. And the idea that he shot a security guard and 6 minutes elapse and then he starts shooting everybody, that only feeds into that
right.
Collapse spiral that the business is going into.
Uh-huh.
It's in their best interest to say that they don't agree with the narrative, even if they have no evidence that that's the case.
Right.
That's their best PR move. Alex is just fucking babadoo-boo-boo.
Right.
Anyway, here's a clip where we're going to start about Harvey Weinstein and how he's into scat.
I mean, I said earlier in the week that Weinstein guaranteed like to humiliate women. Now, that's what they're all like in Hollywood. It's not a crystal ball. It's like once you realize these types, I used to read a lot of historical books when I was a teenager. And I read some criminology books, not just pulp fiction, but some serious ones about how the police
sounds
obsessed
like it's a lot
on profiling. And I used to think, oh, people are more diverse than that. There's no way, because nice people are diverse in their things they do. Not criminals,
as long as they're white.
And others. There's like maybe 15 different types. And man, you just learn the groups, the types, and it's like how a wild hog acts, how a white-tailed deer acts, how a puma acts, how a moose acts, you know, how a squirrel acts, how a buzzard acts, how a fox acts. And you just, you learn how. How a Hollywood executive pedophile devil worshiper acts. You see, they want to humiliate children and innocents. Well, young, beautiful women, it's not about putting them on a pedestal. It's about, you know, using the bathroom on the floor and making them eat it. Oh, you want that starring role? You want 20 million? Call me God. Get on the ground and call that God. I'm Harvey Weinstein. You're not just going to worship me. You're gonna worship what I do on the ground. You understand? Listen.
You've done that before.
You're going to go with us to a little cabin in the woods next weekend and see what we really do. Because now that you're into this and you do this, you're going to see what we really do. You think it's just broads?
Fake laugh. He's really enjoying that too much.
Yeah.
You know, playing that character. You're going to watch me shit. I mean, Harvey Weinstein did some awful stuff.
At least he didn't defend him this time.
That's true. That's a nice twist.
At least he's like, hey, it is bad whenever women are mistreated.
Yeah.
Except he's more like, it's only bad whenever Hollywood people mistreat women.
Well, no, but even in that clip, he's still doing that thing that he's been doing, which is the, like, it's not about putting them on a pedestal. It's almost as if he believes, like, if you just make them calm, everything will be fine. That sort of thing. It's almost that, like, version of misogyny that he's expressing.
Yeah.
And it's fucking wild.
You could treat them that poorly so long as you're, like, worshiping them at the same time.
Right, which is not creepy at all.
No.
So that clip, he's getting real creepy and talking about worshiping poop and what have you.
Right.
Which makes me real thrilled to learn what we learn in this next clip about Alex's audience.
Like my children, they go, if everyone hates Trump so much, why did he get elected? And I said to my oldest daughter yesterday, I said, 13-year-old sweetheart, I said, sweetheart, that's the old corporate media. I said, do you watch Jimmy Kimmel? No, who's that? Do you watch CNN? No. Do you watch any of that? She goes, no. I go, what do you watch? She goes, well, you.
Oh, no.
And that's I said, who do the people watch at your school? Well, you.
No.
I mean, I go to her school, and this isn't about me bragging, but
sure.
Like, every grade, and then across the street, the high schoolers see me, and it's like, it's Alex Jones, and I don't want to do this on camera, because Hollywood stages stuff where people run up with paparazzi. That started in the 20s. They would stage cameras and newspapers there to make it look like they were news to get other news to pile on. But I can literally go out and walk in front of a high school in Austin when it lets out, and I will be mobbed with people wanting photos and autographs and people, I was just listening to you. They're not watching Angelina Jolie or Morgan Freeman. And again, I'm not even bragging.
I'm more famous than Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman.
Well, he also always says Morgan Freeman. But so it might be another guy. I'm
that
not entirely
be,
sure.
That could be. Yeah.
If you're keeping score in that clip, he said, I'm not bragging twice, which probably means I feel self-conscious about how hard I'm bragging.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not true. I love the, like, look, I'm not going to get a camera and prove that kids mob me everywhere I go. And, dude, if you're going to be talking about, like, you know, Harvey Weinstein shitting on the floor and then making snuff films with ladies, you should not have 12-year-olds listening to that. That's awful. Even us critiquing and breaking down what he talks about, I don't want 12-year-olds listening to this. I'd be horrified if I went to a school and everyone's like, Dan! Like, no.
No
nope. Way.
We gotta teach them young.
It would turn into
how else do we get them, wean them off the scat play?
Right.
They have the internet now. We gotta explain that it's bad before it goes any further.
Someone made a good point in the chat room. I believe it was our friend Nikki Gifts that, it's shocking that he can still talk to his kids at this point.
Yeah.
And the beginning of the clip explains some of the things he's got to go through.
Well, they weren't allowed to use clips of the show in the trial.
Right.
If that were to occur.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
It's court ordered that I go to psychology meetings every 2 weeks with my daughters. I mean, I don't have to go, but they go. And
don't fucking sell out your kids like that. Don't do that.
I don't have to go.
I'm perfect. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. It's the kids.
They definitely don't focus more on me and my rampant
and the horrible,
malignant narcissism.
The horrible things that I put everyone around me through.
And it's turned out okay overall. I had a contested divorce. That's part of the system, and that's what happened. But, I mean, here's an example. I walk into the psychology place yesterday at 4 o'clock.
Psychology place.
There's a family walking out of some of the other psychology offices. He shakes my hand. He's got a young daughter and a son. Hey, I love the show. Just listened the other day. Love David Knight. Okay, thanks.
Already not true.
Is that why they're in the psychology place? They're like, oh, whoa, our dad loves Alex Jones'
show.
No.
He loves David Knight, is what he said.
Oh,
which
God.
Which is the dead ringer that this story is not true. No one brings that up in public.
Appreciate it. I go sit down. My daughters are inside for an hour. Before they're about to come out, a 15-year-old girl comes in, sits down. I don't say anything to her because she's unaccompanied. I'm sitting there waiting on my daughters, playing on the phone, sending texts, doing news, researching.
No.
And then her mom walks in, and she looks at me. She looks at her phone. She goes, I'm listening to Owen Schroyer right now on this app.
That is
not true.
That is the Nicaragua of lies right there.
But I think what he's doing is he's trying to get subtle plugs out for the other shows that are on his network now. Because David Knight has the morning show, Owen Schroyer has the drive time. And so I think that's what he's doing. This is all this is all a subtle pitch.
That whole
it's
like
an ad.
I didn't talk to the 15-year-old girl because she was unaccompanied.
I respect that.
I'm a predator.
Nah, I support that. I support that. Leave people alone in public.
No, I'm fine with leaving her alone.
All right.
But the unaccompanied part is where it's like, if she had somebody there, I would have been like, it's time to play.
Weird if you talk to someone in public if they're not alone. You know, I think that's definitely
absolutely
true. So I don't, it's weird that comes up in his very not true story.
Exactly.
But it is it's not, I don't think it's wrong. It's just a strange part of your fantasy life, Alex.
But it's some app I've never seen. It's like a blue InfoWars square. She goes, it's incredible. And she said, you know, all my neighbors are listening now. It's amazing.
No.
And again, I'm not bragging, folks.
Third time.
I'm just saying they know they're dead. And I'm not saying we're the future or we're cool or we've got red carpets. That's all stupid. The point is, They are the past. They know they've collapsed. They know they're a joke.
He's basically saying that he's the future while saying, I'm not saying I'm the future.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying we're the future. I'm just saying everybody else is in the past.
Yeah. Do you think he can go even further with this? Do you think?
I believe that he can.
So he started with saying his kids listen to the show.
Yeah.
Then he went to all of the kids at their school listen to the show.
Everyone listens to the
show. And now I'm at doctor's offices and people can't tell me how much they love InfoWars enough.
Right.
It just keeps going. And you can keep going. It turns out there's even more groups of people who listen to him.
If you're Trump.
Give three more examples.
Or he you're does. These folks, you know new media is bigger than mainstream media, but still what you read is the New York Times. And so that still is what matters to you. But that's almost over, folks. That generation's almost gone. And they're great people. I'm not glad to say it. But the statistics show what I just told you. And it's not just that some of my children go to one particular school, so they watch and listen there.
I also don't
think... Is that like the school from Fame, but for InfoWars?
I mean...
Like they're all dancing down the street, and then they're like, the world is falling apart, and there are chimeras all over the place.
No, I mean, that would be fun. I'd watch that show.
That would be fun. I would watch that movie so fast.
But I think what the reality is
breaking to electric InfoWars.
He's come up with a lie, and that is that all the kids at my kid's school listen to the show, and he's dumb. So the first rebuttal he could come up with is, oh, my kids go there, so they must watch it all at school, like in the classes and shit,
because
my kids go there, so I must rebut that dumb rebuttal,
right,
as opposed to being like, not a chance. I mean, there's just not a chance that's even...
Also, if you were Alex Jones's kids, there is no way that you would want people at your school to know you were Alex Jones's kids.
No way.
No, I would... Look, it was bad enough being me in high school, yeah, let alone being Alex Jones's kid.
My mom was the computer teacher at my elementary school, and it was brutal.
Mine was the music teacher at my elementary school.
I can't imagine. Your dad is the guy who screams about all kinds of eating shits.
Yeah.
What have you.
Yeah, bring your dad to school day must have been a fucking terrifying
experience.
Well,
he's either a delight in person or it's a tragedy everywhere. Yeah. I don't know what the reality is. But anyway, he's not done. There are more groups of people who listen.
Young people, when they see me at the mall or wherever, literally their mouths hang open and they go, it's the living me. Trendies, old people, black folks, Hispanics, executive class Hispanics, Hispanic guys, you know, five guys walking through at the mall with gold chains all around their neck. That's Alex Jones. We love you so much. It doesn't matter. It's all groups. Because they know this is as close to reality as you're going to get.
No.
Okay.
We got Hispanics.
What?
We got executive class Hispanics.
Yeah. We've even got business class Hispanics.
We got first class.
But let me tell you something. None of that priority boarding bullshit.
No. Uh-huh. He's got.
They're trendies and globalists, my friend.
He's got kids at the mall slack-jawed at that they're seeing the living meme in person.
Unfucking real.
He's really projecting pretty hard.
Yeah.
So he talks quite a bit about Weinstein and what have you.
Yeah.
And then he drops this gem on us, which is a little bit too long for me to have been an out of context drop, but I wish it would have been, because this is delightful.
It's an act of domination, an act of control. Lyndon Baines Johnson, this is on record, and Pulitzer Prize winning books, would hold cabinet meetings while he took extended, incredibly stench-filled dumps. And he
you
did
know
it
worse?
To dominate people.
That is true.
Oh, yeah, it's 100%
true. 100%
true. Yeah, yeah. But
he nicknamed his dick Jumbo. Full disclosure, I do a bit about Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Yeah, LBJ sucks.
Yeah.
But also...
Also, he passed the Civil Rights Act as well as Medicare and...
Also wasn't the same thing as what Weinstein did.
No!
There's subtle differences to holding cabinet meetings while you're taking a shit.
I mean,
and forcing women to do shit.
Our presidents have been almost universally garbage.
Yes, of course.
So I mean,
well, it takes an insane mind to draw oneself towards like thinking you deserve power, And so, like, the idea, I mean, everyone, much smarter people than me have said this, but like, yeah, it should be, it should
anybody who wants to be president should never be allowed to be president. Yeah.
And anybody who wants to do the things that Larry Nichols does, it's indicative that there's something wrong with you. So this is a little bit more about Lyndon Baines Johnson. And then we've got to get to a failed prediction that I made last night.
Okay.
And that's all Hollywood is, and the NFL and Kaepernick and all these super uncool people like LeBron James and Eminem all getting together. And, you know, the same headline everywhere. A fierce attack. I saw it in just headlines everywhere. A fierce attack by Eminem. Just some pathetic corporate shill with LeBron James and the.
So I texted you, I think this morning, and I predicted that half of the show would be about Eminem and how he's a race traitor, but like veiled language.
Yeah.
I was off, man. He barely talks about Eminem.
Barely talks about Eminem?
Yeah. And I feel like it's,
well, he's worried that Eminem is going to challenge him to a freestyle rap battle. And Alex,
hey,
I'm not bragging.
What about those TVs, bitch? the thing is, like, I was hoping he'd bring up Eminem because I wanted to talk about him a little bit. First of all, I think Eminem is pretty great in many ways, especially in the context of D12. I think D12 is amazing.
I knew you would bring up D12.
Horrorcore rap is great. That stuff and the Grave Diggers and stuff like that, where they set out intentionally to freak out white people. As a part of the genre.
Right.
I love
Odd
it.
Future Wolfgang Killed Them All was a relative descendant of that.
I didn't like that as much, but be that as it may, I like a lot of that stuff. I do respect a lot of Eminem's work.
Listen, Earl Sweatshirt is great though.
I don't disagree. But be that as it may, that video that Eminem dropped, I gotta say, he's not great. I appreciate the text, the context and the subject matter. I think that's great. I think he's saying something that is great, because there should be more celebrities coming out and being like, fuck
you.
Off.
If
you support this, you cannot possibly support what I'm into.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. But man, he was weak on the bars. It was not good. And the video of him, like him pacing around, it's very produced. And then everyone, like all these dumbasses on Twitter posting like, oh my God, that freestyle was sick. I'm like, you didn't freestyle that shit.
Yeah, no
I've
kidding.
Heard Eminem freestyle like crazy before. He's very good at it. If he was doing it, if he was actually off the dome, as they say, it would have been so much better.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing, but that was very, very rehearsed.
Of course.
And rehearsed to make it seem extemporaneous, and I thought it was whack.
I didn't watch it just because I was like, I don't want to, A, be a part of this, and B, be the guy who's like, I didn't like it. Like, I don't want any part of that.
Get this. I was taking a shit last night and needed something to watch. I'm like, oh, this is all over
and
Twitter.
And the Joint Chiefs of Staff were watching.
Absolutely.
You.
And I needed a power move.
Yeah, exactly.
But be that as it may, I still support him and all that. I support the message. I just think it was weak in terms of actual rapping.
Yeah.
I just need that to be clear. Anyway, back to the clip.
The dumb zombies that still think it's cool. Yeah, there's still a big component of schmucks that go spend their money on that and think it's all cool. But it's not the young people anymore. They're like, Dad, I don't want to go see a Harrison Ford movie.
Your life.
I don't want to see. You know,
my dad's a cool guy, nice guy. But he was real excited about the new Blade Runner, and
I'm pretty.
He got tickets and wanted me and my son to go. And I said, Dad, I'm going to work. I don't want to go. And he went and picked my son up, and my son said to his grandfather, he said, "Let's just go over to your house and swim in your pool with Grandma and maybe play cards or something. I don't want to go see a Hollywood movie."
Oh, you don't want
to
go see a 2-hour and 40-minute sequel to a movie you didn't see?
He didn't want
to
watch
Hollywood.
Give three more things he doesn't want to watch.
Lyndon Baines Johnson shit.
I actually would like to see
What you talked over there a little bit was him being like, I didn't have to tell my son that. Like, yeah, but he's a correspondent on InfoWars sometimes, and you've raised him to be
a dick like you.
Yeah, so you kind of did. Also, I don't know, maybe that Blade Runner movie is good. I don't know, I haven't seen it.
I want to see it.
Yeah, who cares?
I love Blade Runner.
So today on the show, Alex Jones takes a lot of calls, comparatively. It's still not many calls.
Right.
But compared to his normal rigmarole, He's taking quite a few calls. One of them is trying to lure him into talking shit on the Jews by saying that are the globalists actually the Khazarians?
Oh. Which,
and Alex sort of fumbles around with that question about, right. Like, well, actually, in primeval Georgia. But
sure.
He does fine. But the best call is a guy who makes Alex remember that he, a long time ago, said he was going to make a music show.
Yes! Wait, that was brought up again?
Yeah, because we know this from MC Daffy Duck,
yeah,
who called in.
Ooh, that was brutal.
And so now this comes back up after this call.
I produce music, basically. You could call it InfoWars or Patriot music.
What does that mean? What's InfoWars music?
I want some of those pants that nobody knows what size they're gonna be.
Muslims in public freak me out.
And have been for about the last 4 years. I work with a friend of mine that's a Nashville staff writer here in Omaha. And that's basically the feedback that I've gotten from him is he doesn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Because
I would argue that it's possible that your music sucks, and he's being polite. I'm just going to guess. I mean, that's possible.
All conservative art sucks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of being a conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of the potential. And now with them shutting down Facebook and your opportunity to be able to promote your music personally,
they're not.
You know,
oh, absolutely. Really, we got the whole evil mainstream media, Hollywood globalist cabal on our back, brother. But here's the deal. Right. Once we're awake and we know they're on our back, just like a buck and bronco or a bull, they're not going to stay on our back forever.
8 seconds.
They can hold on for dear life, but they're never going to make the full 8 seconds they want. Send me some information at showtipsinfowars.com. I'm more and more. Millie Weaver had this idea. Do have this idea years ago as well. I mean, you know, smart folks have the same ideas to have some music shows specifically to highlight independent new music. The problem is you run into their producers and then other stuff and it's a minefield.
This guy does not have a producer.
Uh-oh. So anything that's kind of Hollywoody, and I appreciate your call, Kenny, just gets a little weird. And so that's why, you know, it's hard for us to ever promote stuff or get involved, but I'm sure you're great. Yeah. But you know, there's so much great Patriot music online and a lot of it gets millions of views, millions of listens. It just doesn't get Hollywood recognition, but it's you don't need that. If you're playing to a crowd of 100 people about the truth, you know, and you know, sell 5,000, you know, songs or DVDs or CDs, you're winning.
5,000 songs?
But it is about everybody supporting the media that they think's helping the world. Just like InfoWars. 50% off right now on our great brain pill.
Great. And pivot. Yeah. So that's amazing.
Oh, God.
So I have two more clips that are him manipulating his audience pretty hard.
Uh-huh.
And then I have one last clip that's delightful.
Okay.
So in these next clips, it's really important that we've watched through Alex's journey in 2015 where he comes to identify with Trump. Or like Trump becomes like interlocked with his goals.
Right.
And his, sort of where he's going in life. And now you can see in 2017, he's really desperately trying to do that to his audience. And you can hear it in this clip.
And remember, when they say Donald Trump, they mean you. And I'm not trying to get you to identify yourself personally as Trump. The enemy, when they see NRA, they think gun owner. When they see Trump.
Yeah.
They think average American, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, old, young, wants freedom.
No.
No.
No. That's manipulative nonsense.
They think fake billionaire liar who is a sociopath who's trying to get us all killed.
Right. And when you see NRA, you don't think gun owner.
No, you think mass shootings.
Well, and you think a lobbying agency that is making those more likely.
Absolutely. Well, what makes them more money than mass shootings?
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Of course the NRA wants mass shootings to continue to happen. They make a shit ton of money when they do.
Yeah. And so in this next clip, the identification, A means B, gets even worse.
The globalists have taken down most of the groups, and now there's one bastion halfway left in the globalist mind, in Hollywood's mind, and that's the Midwest. It's and they say it's white because they want to get people to fight with each other, but it's just they mean Christian.
Oh boy. So yeah. White
means white Christians. Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's saying what he means.
Oh.
Or what things mean to him.
Right.
But you got to look at it in the reverse. Christian means white to him. White means Christian. Middle America means white Christian. Normal Trump means white Christian.
Yeah.
But they can be black white people. Oh, well, dude.
We have plenty of, we have evidence that there is at least one black white person.
I completely fucked up.
What?
There was a clip I meant to pull and I didn't get it. It sucks. There was one caller, this lady called in and straight up she said, hey, you know what? Obama, he had a chance to bring the country together. Why didn't they play up more that he was half white? I was like, oh no. Yeah, it was amazing. I was like, whoo. Lady, you are missing it, but fascinatingly.
So wait, her idea is that by his being biracial, that's how he could have done it. If they had played up he is both black and white, like a Michael Jackson video.
Or played it more up that he was half white.
Yeah.
Don't call him half black. Let's call him half white.
I'm one of you white people.
Right, yeah.
Trust me, I'm half white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what she wanted him to do.
There's definitely no historical precedent for a mixed race person to be judged as horribly as someone who is otherwise entirely black.
Yeah. It's nonsense, and that's sort of indicative of the calls he gets.
That's fucked up.
Another person called in and was like, hey, I first became exposed to you from the Rogan podcast, and I just saw that you really do have sources. You're really smart. You're on top of it.
Oh, fuck you, Joe Rogan!
Exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ!
Yep, makes it very clear. Anyway, I'm exhausted. Let's get this last clip in here. That Larry Nichols interview fucking exhausted me.
Yeah, I know,
right?
It
made me very frustrated.
I know.
But here we go, the last clip. Alex talks about something that, I don't know. I think I spent a lot of time in my youth. I think he's recontextualizing them in an interesting way.
Do you mean Alex Jones's Grandpa Poole?
No.
Support the good little churches telling the truth, not the big mega one that looks so nice and makes you feel so good. There's all these neat people to meet. I mean, all these big mega churches are swinger clubs. You know that, right? You want to go pick a woman up, just like that, go to a mega church. You want to go swinging, it's where you go.
I did not know that.
Folks, I'm not saying that to be mean. Everybody that goes to them knows that.
Boy, they're stupid.
Support the good little churches telling the truth.
Oh, shit. I love that at the end. Everyone knows that, or they're stupid. You got
to
go.
I didn't know if I wanted to swing, I could just go to a mega church. I did not see that coming.
I went to a mega church growing up, and I will tell you, it was not a swingers club.
It was just nonstop fucking.
No, I mean, some of the kids were finger banging and stuff, but...
Well, what kids aren't finger banging?
Me.
Hey, if you're not finger banging,
you're stupid. I was stupid growing up. So anyway, that brings us to the end of this episode. I don't feel like I got what I wanted out of that interview, but no. I also went in expecting that would be the case.
Yeah, I suppose that all I was really hoping for was to get him to drop that bullshit for just a second. Just 1 second of just him stopping and thinking for a moment. But he's so good at just like, just fucking rolling with it. If you don't believe me, that's on you. I don't need to follow up with anything.
And the details are too thick. You know, there's just so many little points. There's a whole celestial sphere made up of these little names and little details, that
I did
there's
no
piercing
out. I did like finding out that he actually thinks he was the leader of a Nicaraguan drug running scam.
That's fun.
Or gun runners.
I also like that he refused to answer if Meshach Taylor was involved in the church.
He did not want to do that.
No.
He loves Meshach.
Maybe that's too hot.
He loves Meshach. You can't come at Meshach.
Yeah. So, thank you all, for listening and, joining along with us. Please stop telling us to call Larry Nichols.
Yeah,
we will try and find other people's phone numbers.
You can see how unsatisfying that was.
It's fun to talk to him for about 3 minutes
and
him be like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
It's not fun to talk to him for 40.
No.
Anyway, we do thank you all. We appreciate it very much. You guys joining us along here on the Twitch. Also, everybody who's listening to this later, you can find us at knowledgefight.com. That is our website.
You can go to Twitter. It's at @knowledge_fight.
Correct. And we have a Facebook page.
Uh-huh. What was the other thing that we do? Oh, we're on iTunes.
We are.
You can download it. You can subscribe to it. You can leave a review.
Yeah. And generally Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Central, we're here live on Twitch. But this Thursday, tomorrow, we will not be We'll not be broadcasting because I am going to friend of the show Matt Riggs' wedding.
Congratulations, Matt Riggs!
Indeed, congratulations. But we will be back next week with some fun. We'll try and find Paul Joseph Watson's phone number.
Yeah.
No, we won't. I don't want to talk to him.
No, I don't ever
want to
talk to him.
No. So you guys can stop.
And I don't really want to talk to Alex either because it would just turn into him and me shouting at each other.
Yeah, mostly just bark at him.
Yeah.
So you guys can stop that chant.
Either that or me saying, give three more examples.
Right. I'd be like, Alex,
I don't give two hoots of a rat's balls.
Alex will be on this podcast by the time I'm a duck. So
if it walks like a duck and that angel doesn't have wings.
Yeah. So we'd like to thank Larry Nichols for, taking time out of his day. We do appreciate that.
Nah, fuck him.
No, there's another guy who's got to fuck off. It's this toothless son of a bitch who won't give us a call and talk for 40 minutes.
Oh, shit, man. We got to talk to his bullshit ass.
It's fucking fine. Fucking Rappaport's number.
Absolutely.
That can't be that hard. Howard. I got a little cold.
It's actually written on the back of that picture. That's why he'll never hang it up.
Yeah. Call Dan and Jordan.
John
Rappaport sucks.
You know who I really think is at fault? For this whole thing right here, this whole interview with Larry Nichols. Larry Nichols, after I talked to him earlier in the day, he gave this guy a call and he was like, what do I say?
Right.
And this guy was like, you just lie your balls off.
Just keep
directly
talking.
Directly to their fucking faces.
Just keep talking.
Just keep on lying to him. So that means I have one thing to say.
What's that?
Go fuck yourself, John Rappaport.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.